The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Denver Broncos select Jay Cutler, quarterback, Vanderbilt.
Cutler straight drop, steps up in the pocket.
I'm going to be best friends with Jay Cutler.
Really?
Yeah.
Cutler throws and caught for a touchdown.
Okay, welcome back. We got another show uncut with Jay Cutler. Hope you've enjoyed them so far. Today's going to be an interesting one. We've talked about Bigfoot, I think, on the show. I've talked about it on Twitter. I've always watched a lot of the Bigfoot Sasquatch shows on Animal Planet and Discovery and all the places they're on. So today we've got Cliff Barackman calling in. He's been on a lot of those shows. He travels the country, I think the world also, looking for Bigfoot. I don't know if we call him Sasquatch. I don't know if Yeti's a thing. A lot of questions. And I want to be clear. I want to believe in Bigfoot. I think I believe in Bigfoot. I want him to make me more of a believer. And so I'm hoping that he's got some hard proof. I read somewhere that he has had a sighting. He's been out, seen Bigfoot. I'm sure he's got all the tracks. But like I'm talking, I want DNA. I mean, there's got to be something out there. So let's get him on. And once again, if you have any comments, get on Apple, get on wherever you listen to your podcast. Hit me up on Twitter, Instagram. I think we're heading in the right direction with this podcast. If not, let me know and we'll figure it out. So let's get Cliff on here and let's learn about some Bigfoot. All right, we've got Cliff Barackman. Am I saying that right?
I say Barackman, but feel free to say whatever you'd like.
Barackman, Cliff Barackman. My fault. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I always appreciate opportunities like this.
I've followed. I mean, you've been on shows for a long time. I mean, 2011 to 2018. On the Animal Planet, Finding Bigfoot. Now there's Finding Bigfoot. The Search Continues.
You got to do a lot of one-off stuff as well. I've got my own podcast. Yeah, I'm all over the place. Yeah.
Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Long Beach, California.
Really?
Which is a great place to grow up. I mean, unless you're into Bigfoot. But, you know, I have a degree in music, so it was really good for me because I had a lot of places to play and a lot of gigs to do. And it's a great, great musical environment to grow up with. But as I became more and more interested in the Bigfoot thing, I decided I had to get the heck out of Dodge, you know, and get a little bit closer to suitable habitat so I can pursue that interest.
When did that start? When did you start getting into them?
Well, I've always kind of been weird. I'll say that. I mean, even I'm 50 years old. I grew up in the 1970s, so I was blessed with things like, you know, In Search Of and Legend of Boggy Creek and all those schlockumentaries, as I call them. But so I've always been interested in the weird stuff, but never really took it seriously as an intellectual pursuit until I was in college. When I was in college, and I have a degree in music, I had a few hour break between classes. And so I would go into the library and just kind of pull books off of the shelves in subjects that I was interested in, you know, mostly science, because I'm kind of a nerd in that way. And one day I ran across a compilation of scholarly articles written about Sasquatches by anthropologists. And that's when I first realized, like, holy smokes, people are actually doing science on this. And so I started digesting and reading as much as possible about the subject from a scientific standpoint. And before long, once you're exposed to the breadth and depth of the evidence, you really have no choice but to start taking it a little bit more seriously. And so I was already camping and stuff. So I kind of put it on the list, because at the end of the day, Bigfooting is a lot like camping with a purpose.
Yeah, I don't think people realize, and that's kind of what I want to get into. Like, I believe that there's Sasquatch. I believe it's out there. I just need more science and to be pushed into believing.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to be exposed to the evidence that stands up to scientific rigor, essentially, is what it comes down to. And it's difficult to do, especially in this age of Facebook and misinformation and crackpots and everything, because there's a lot of hoaxing in the world. There just simply is a lot of hoaxing. And on top of that, there's a tremendous number of people that, since Sasquatches are still an unproven species, they kind of jump to illogical conclusions about that. Like, they're not proven, therefore they must be interdimensional, shape-shifting, UFO riding, whatevers.
Yeah.
When that's not a necessary thing at all, if really you understand a little bit about the natural history of the subject. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for people because, I mean, obviously there's no specimen out there. No one has really found one, or one that's been dead and someone ran into it or anything like that. So, like, the physical component of it is still missing, which makes it probably very hard for people to get on board with this.
Well, yeah. And people just can't comprehend, like, how could that possibly be that we don't have a dead one yet? And really, honestly, I find that most people, the vast majority of the public, they don't even realize that science needs a dead one to prove a species as real. That dead one is called a holotype. And what you do is you kill it, and then a scientist describes it, or, you know, analyzes it, its anatomy, et cetera, in a scientific paper, then goes through peer review. And then if that passes, it gets published, and then suddenly the species is real. You know, it's the publishing that makes something
makes it real
for scientists. Exactly. Whereas Bigfoots are already real. You don't need to publish about it. But I guess for the academics to accept it, you do.
Let's talk about your best defense for the unexpected. Are you prepared if the unthinkable happens? If a medical emergency arises, Air Med Care Network provides members with world-class emergency air transport services to the nearest hospital with no out-of-pocket expenses. Join today and never pay a dime for your medical flight when flown by an AMCN provider. Insurance doesn't always cover the full cost of a medical emergency, so this is a great way to secure financial peace of mind. Memberships cost as little as $85 a year for your entire household. And right now, as a listener of my show, you get up to $50 Visa or Amazon gift card with a new membership. Visit MedCareNetwork.com/J and use offer code J. No matter where you're at the game of life, an Air Med Care Network membership is a protection no one should live without. It's like, what is it? Is it more animal? Is it more human? Like, what's your take on this?
Well, first of all, what are they? I think is an appropriate way to frame it.
Sure.
Yeah, and these are very, very small nuances that contribute to the public not taking the subject seriously. Mm-hmm. Very often, probably almost on a daily or certainly a weekly basis, someone comes into the museum where I own a Bigfoot museum called the North American Bigfoot Center, and somebody comes into the shop and says, "Have you found him? Where's the last time he has been seen?" And that kind of gives me a temperature gauge for the public, essentially, what they think about the subject. And of course, if you think there's an individual who we call Bigfoot and he has been seen in California and Florida and wherever all for hundreds of years, well, of course, the whole thing's hogwash. That doesn't make any sense, right? No, it's a species of undocumented, unproven, in other words, primate of some sort. We don't know what they are, but we have some general ideas. As far as are they animal or human, well, I would like to, again, to point out that humans are animals.
Absolutely.
I mean, what are we? We're not plants. We're not fungi. We're not bacteria. We're definitely animals, and we are part of that greater kingdom. So Sasquatches are animals. They're human-like in many ways, but the most obvious being that they're bipedal. Now, depending on how much more human they are than that, well, we need to know a bit more about them. I suspect that they are they are hominins. And it's like hominid, but with an N at the end. And the word hominin means anything on the human line or any of its branches. Since we broke off from our last common ancestor with chimpanzees about 6 million years ago or so. Those are all hominins. Okay. But when you look at Sasquatches, you can look at their behavior to get some sort of idea about what where they might be on that family. I'll call it a tree, but it's really more of a bush because mm-hmm. there's no central trunk. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to use fire, so they're not making and controlling fire. They use tools, but, you know, so do sea otters and crows. So that doesn't make them human. Their tool use doesn't seem to go beyond anything more than like using rocks to break open clamshells or things like that. So chimpanzee-like tool use. Now, if we look on our R line, our human Homo line, the first of our genus to do that was Homo habilis. Well, it seems to me we have to look before that to find out what Sasquatches are, or at least where our last common ancestor is. And that gives us the Australopithecines. Now, that's a fancy pants word, but I bet a lot of your listeners know about the famous Lucy skeleton that was unearthed in 1974 in Africa. And she was an Australopithecine. Australopithecines actually have two large branches, a more gracile branch, which is what Lucy was. She was Australopithecus afarensis. But there's also a more robust branch of that family that were basically Sasquatches 4 or 5 feet tall. I suspect, and I don't know this, but I suspect that Sasquatches are probably those things, robust Australopithecines, also known as Paranthropus, that radiated out of Africa, moved northwards into the colder climates, and we all know that animals in colder climates are larger than animals in warmer tropical climates. It's called Bergman's rule, it's a biological rule. And I think they just got bigger because it's not that big of a jump between 5 and 8 feet at the end of the day if you give them a few thousand generations to get larger.
That's true.
That's what I think they are. And that's a long-winded answer. I'm sorry about that.
That's awesome, though.
You know, you're talking to a Bigfoot nerd. It's hard to get that shut up.
So you think like their general size is 8 foot, 7, 8 foot?
Yeah, I think they range probably between 6 and 8 feet on average. And of course, there are probably larger ones. There's probably even a few short. I mean, every 8 footer starts out as a 2 footer, you know, so there's certainly shorter ones. But there's probably a few that are bigger than that. But there's also probably a physical limit on how large they can be, just like there is with elephants. Because or human beings for that matter, because, you know, your strength is to move around the mass. Right. And so the bigger you are, the more muscles you need to move that mass around. And at some point, if you graph this information, at some point, the amount of muscle that you add to a body doesn't compensate for the amount of mass you just added to move it. You know, it's a game of limits.
There's a ratio there.
Yeah, I mean, being like a guy who's like, you know, physically fit and you're around like tremendously large individuals like yourself, mm-hmm. you know, being a football player and all that sort of stuff, you probably see that there is a limit. You wouldn't expect to see like a 10 or 12 foot tall human because of the damage that sort of mass would do to their joints and ligaments and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure you see that all the time with just like regular 6.5 foot tall people too.
Yeah, you do. So I read you're basically on the road kind of 200 days a year in the field. Is that true?
Well, at the high point of my field investigation, that was true. Yeah. But that was also, I was selling a house in Southern California and moving up north. I had no place to really, I had to be or live. And I had, so that year I was on, I did probably about 200 days in the woods that year. That's not my regular gig at this point.
Yeah.
Although now I live in the woods. So I've kind of changed the terms of my game, I suppose.
So, I mean, the Sasquatch, I mean, they're in, have you found that they're isolated to very, very remote places, or are they kind of underneath some people's noses at times?
Oh, they're right under our noses, actually. That is another one of the myths about Sasquatches, is that you have to go way out in the middle of nowhere to possibly even run across one. That's not true at all. It's not any more true of that than it is bears, for example. But they do demand a certain kind of a wet, lush climate. Okay. We found that a long time ago, there was a correlation between rainfall and Sasquatch sighting reports. So, which makes sense, because the more rain there is, the more plants there are, the more herbivores there are, there's more food items for Sasquatches, et cetera. So that makes a lot of sense. But really, if you start looking at, their habitat, you find that there's a direct correlation between bear habitat and Sasquatch habitat, which of course makes sense if they're biological animals as they are, because bears are the other large omnivore here in North America. And bears can walk through your backyard if you live in appropriate habitat. Sasquatches aren't walking down city streets. They seem to try to avoid us the best they can, but you only own your property during the day. And Sasquatches are largely nocturnal. So they can cruise through and take a few handfuls of, you know, sweet feed from the barn, or take a cat and eat it, or whatever they're into, and you probably never even know about it. In fact, a lot of times people have observed Sasquatches like raiding their apple trees, but not taking them all. And other times, actually, they wake up and the next morning the entire apple tree is devoid of apples at all. So sometimes they are a little bit rude like that and take it all for themselves.
Have you had you've seen one?
Yeah.
With your own eyes?
I saw one through a thermal imager. I wish I would have seen one with my own eyes, but it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, about 2 miles off trail in North Carolina. We were doing some investigative work at a place where there had been numerous repeated Sasquatch observations and encounters with rock throwing and sounds and other indicators they might be in the area. Mm-hmm. And there was, I'll tell you, it was either a dude or a Sasquatch. I saw it through a thermal imager, which only sees heat, okay?
Yep.
It doesn't see light. Well, it sees infrared light, but like that's what heat is. Heat is infrared. Yep. So whatever this was a human-shaped figure about 70 yards away on the opposing hillside, navigating the wooded hillside without a light at 2 o'clock in the morning and quickly outpacing us. Also, through a thermal imager, it was one color from head to toe, pretty much one color. Whereas if this is February, by the way, I would expect anybody out there. I know I was wearing a big puffy jacket.
Yeah.
I was all bundled up because it was very, very cold. And when you look at a person wearing clothing through a thermal imager, well, the jackets are the cooler spots because it keeps your heat in.
Yeah.
So there was no differentiation from head to toe on whatever I observed. And we also got vocalizations off the hillside about 45 minutes later. I'm inclined to think what I saw was a Sasquatch. But again, I'm telling you the truth. I always will. That I saw it through a thermal imager. It, you know, the behavior lines up the Sasquatch, not human, et cetera. So I'm inclined to think I did see one. Yes.
That's awesome. So you talked about their habitat. I mean, do you think that they stay out of the harsher winter places? Because because bears, they'll hibernate.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the North Carolina bears don't really hibernate at all, just because the weather, you know, on the coast and stuff. So,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. It depends where they are. You have black bears in Olympic Peninsula. They don't really hibernate if they're by the coast. Yeah. It's the ones that are in the nasty weather that do. And Sasquatches I don't think they hibernate, because there are sightings during February and January, January, February, in the height of winter. There are sightings. There are fewer sightings, though. And I think that's probably a human factor more than it is a Sasquatch factor. They certainly change their diet because, you know, a lot of the plants and berries and stuff just aren't available.
Are gone.
They probably go to they probably go to a more meat heavy environment, or lichens, or those old man hair, like the high carbohydrate content of those things. They certainly change their diet. They have to change their behavior to some degree. But, you know, elk and deer, they don't hibernate. They just deal with it by going to the lowest elevation they can.
Yep.
And I think Sasquatches probably follow them. I think that they have the same sort of habitats. And in fact, there is a good friend of mine, Kathy Strain is her name. She is the head Forest Service archaeologist for Stanislaus National Forest. You know, and an archaeologist for National Forest basically is the interface between the federal government and the indigenous tribes in the area. If they're building a road and they find a human skull, well, it's a native skull, clearly. So they go to the tribes and they deal with it they do what they do. But she's also a Sasquatch witness. She knows her real. So one time she has maps of her national forest and the archaeological sites, and she put a map of those archaeological sites over a map of the deer migration routes through her national forest, and they lined up perfectly. But then she took a map of Sasquatch sighting reports and correlated that to the deer migration route, and sure enough, they also matched. So I think that's a strong indicator that Sasquatches are following the deer herds around and just using the same adaptations and, frankly, feeding on the deer as well.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense. I mean, they're going to go where the weather's the least harshest. I mean, it's a food source for them. Well traveled trails. So, what are the numbers? Like, how many Sasquatches do we think are in existence?
Well, not as many as a lot of people would think. Right now, our best guess is that there's probably about 100 or so bears for every one Sasquatch. That's the best guess at this point as far as ecology goes. And I don't know that much about ecology. I'm just listening to people who know more about it than I do and taking their guess. Dr. Grover Krantz, in this case, from Washington State University, said there's at least 100 bears, maybe 200, for every one Sasquatch. Well, in my home state here of Oregon, there's about 30,000 or so bears, which would logically bring about 300 Bigfoots. Yeah, which, you know, it's not really not that many. And people come into to the museum all the time and they say, how come we don't see them more? And I say, well, how many bear have you seen? Oh, I've seen a lot of bear. Well, how many is that? I've seen 10 bear in my life living here in Oregon. I said, well, that's cute. There's 30 or 35,000 of them here in Oregon.
Yeah.
No one's asking how come bears stay out of sight, right? Yeah. It's just a natural thing they do. So 300 Sasquatches would be extraordinarily hard to see. So I'm guessing 300 or so in Oregon. And if we extrapolate to the known suitable habitat throughout the entirety of North America, which is a really big place, most of it's empty.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 or 10,000, I think, is a reasonable guess, which sounds like a lot, but it would actually make it one of the most rare large animals in North America.
Build a confidence-boosting fall wardrobe with this season's collections of versatile mix-and-match styles from Express. Express is all new and made to express you. Use the hashtag ExpressYou to see all their confidence-boosting styles, unmatched comfort, and always the highest quality. And Express soft sets are really a game-changer. From their new silky suede scuba and luxe velour to the luxe sweaters and fleece sets, these cozy combos are the unofficial uniforms of fall. As that weather continues to change, you'll need to make sure you've got some nice new jeans too. It doesn't get much better than Express and their four-way hyper stretch jeans. It's total comfort with four-way hyper stretch fabric, fresh fades, and their comfort stretch waist. And you're always ready to go with Express essentials like tees, polos, and graphic tees. Plus, everything is machine washable, so no dry cleaning, no sweat marks, just the perfect variety of both casual and style. Shop the latest confidence boosting styles in store and online at express.com. Everything from just hanging out to a big night out, you can find it all at Express. Be on the lookout for great deals in stores and at express.com. Express confidence.
I mean, I was just out in Montana at my ranch, and you know, we have black bears there.
And probably grizzlies too, right?
And they pass through once in a while. But much to your point, seeing a black bear on that property is not that easy.
Mm-mm,
at all. I mean, you'll catch them every once in a while. But, I mean, I've had the property for 5-6 years, and I've only seen maybe 3 or 4.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I live out in the woods. I live on the slopes of Mount Hood here in Oregon in the Cascade Range. And I have yet to see a bear on my property, although I have game cameras out. And I see them on the cameras a fair amount, probably every 2 or 3 sets, you know, so one or two wander through every couple months. But I never see them with my own eyes, almost never. But they're around.
Oh, they're definitely around. Nocturnal. I mean, and they just they're well adapted, hiding in shadows and creeping along.
Yeah. Have you? Oh, yeah, totally.
Do you have Sasquatch on game cameras ever?
I have not, but I've seen some very compelling pictures of Sasquatches that were obtained on game cameras. A couple of them have made it out to the public or television, like the Vermont photograph is a really good one. We did that one on Finding Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. But some of the best ones I've seen, we actually, like there's one in particular from the Oklahoma area, that we approach the people, and it's fantastic. It's a great picture. It's unambiguous. Mm-hmm. We approach them to be on the TV show. And yeah. this woman who lives like in a trailer with her daughter, right, in western Oklahoma somewhere, she says, well, I don't really want the attention. And, of course, the producers wanted the picture. So they said, well, tell you what, we'll pay you more. Yeah. We'll blur your face out and we'll change your voice electronically. No one will ever know it's you. And she goes, mm-hmm. No. I don't want it. No, I don't want anything to do with this. All I want is to be able to hunt my property and not be afraid. And you can't give me that. And so then you have to think about the psychology of these people who live out there in the sticks, basically. Sometimes their reputation is the most valuable thing they have.
Sure.
And to be associated with something like, yeah, I've got a picture of something that's not real, you mm-hmm. know, according to the community.
Yeah.
That would, you know, it can do real damage to people's reputation. They think they're drug using or drunks or crazy or liars or, you know, choose the adjective of your choice. It's not good, whatever it is.
Sure. Do most people think that Sasquatch is a dangerous animal?
Well, I think they're clearly potentially dangerous. I mean, they're 8 feet tall. I mean, a chimpanzee who is 4 feet tall has 8 times the strength of you, yeah. you know, and you lift heavy things, you know, like you're into health and things, like 8 times stronger than you. And these things are 4 feet tall. Yeah. So what would an 8-footer, you know, like how amazingly strong would that be? They'd probably rip you in half if they wanted to.
Oh, absolutely.
So they are potentially dangerous, but, clearly, they're not out to get us. And as evidence, I would say, look around. If they were out to get us, there'd probably be very few of us left.
Yeah.
And the same thing could be said of gorillas, either mountain mm-hmm. gorillas or the lowland gorillas. Mm-hmm. They're not, I mean, they've been treated as monsters because they personify something that we think that we're higher than, you know, in the great chain of being in that sort of way. But you know, they're not like that at all. They're not beasts. They're not, you know, kidnapping women. They're not doing out there killing people, and they're just living their lives, eating leaves, you know, and Sasquatches are very similar in the same sort of way.
Yes, they seem to be. Like, what do you think that we're ever going to find a specimen or a one that's dead or any like heavy compelling evidence?
Well, yeah, since these are real animals, I think that I'm completely convinced of that. I mean, mm-hmm. Since they are real animals, it's logical that one will come to light eventually. Either a hunter will finally pull the trigger and kill one of these and bring it in, because there have been stories of people killing them and not bringing them for various reasons, mostly because they thought they killed a weird person and they're going to be charged with murder.
Yeah.
You know? Or maybe a logging truck will hit a young one on the way to work or something. You know, something will happen eventually, and the dead one will come to light, and then the species will be real. And frankly, not much will change after that, except for people's perceptions. And I'm concerned about that. I'm not going to be the guy to pull the trigger. I know that proof demands a body, and I'm not willing to pull the trigger, basically. I'm not a gun guy. I've got a couple firearms, but I'm not a gun guy, you know? And I don't think someone like me should be trying to kill a Sasquatch. I think you should be well-versed in hunting things like grizzly bears and polar bears if you're going to be... And you should also have bullets nearby so you can reload, because just because you kill one doesn't mean there's only one in the area. Would be horrifying. That's the subject of a good horror movie right there. But I'm concerned about them. I think discovery might be one of the worst things to happen to them. And so again, I'm pro discovery, but I'm not trying to do it.
So you'd rather this mystique and this legend of them just continue down this way because you...
Oh, no. No. No, 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 no. Let me clarify. Okay. I would like them to be discovered because I think that they will eventually need official protection. I'm just not going to be the guy to pull the trigger, so I can't advocate for the discovery because it sounds hypocritical to me.
I got you.
You know, it's like, I don't know, I'm a nerd, right? So I've read Game of Thrones as well as watched it, right? Mm-hmm. In the very first episode of Game of Thrones, the dad is telling his kid, don't sentence anybody to death unless you're willing to swing the sword. I kind of feel the same way. I am advocating for the education of the public about Sasquatches mm-hmm. to soften the blow of the eventual discovery, so they're treated appropriately and they are basically, you know, protected and left alone to their own devices.
So would you be concerned then if a body was found or someone did kill one and then brought it in, that more people would probably join in the hunt to hunt these things down?
I am concerned about that. I would like to think that the American public is enlightened to the point where they realize that killing, like hunting, apes or our closest yeah. relative or mm-hmm. whatever these things turn out to be is probably morally wrong. They hunt apes in Africa because in those areas, there's terrible civil wars ravaging yeah. the land and they're starving to death.
Yeah.
I would like to think that we're not those people that would think it's okay to kill something that is so closely related to us. But at the same time, I'm aware of the gun culture here in the United States. And I know that some people will shoot anything. Trophy hunting, for example, I think is a savage, horrible, unenlightened, ignorant thing to mm-hmm. kill something to take a picture with it. And that's it. Yeah. That seems. Yeah. And if that's listeners, I'm sorry about that. Yeah. But you can't catch and release with a bullet. Right.
Nope.
So I'm a little I am concerned about that sort of culture wanting to mount a Sasquatch head on the wall to think it's cool. But that would just show who the real monsters are, in my opinion. So I do think that there's a concern about that.
Sure.
But I'm also perhaps naively optimistic, and maybe we would just want to protect our closest living relative on the planet that shares our own backyard instead of, skinning them and putting them on the wall. But then again, some people want to probably hunt humans, too, for all I know. I don't know.
Possibly.
Every 60 seconds, not one, but two children are trafficked. And every 30 seconds, one is forced into exploitation for the purpose of heinous acts.
Human trafficking is happening in your own backyard. It is happening to your neighbors.
Many whom we see every day in our own communities, hidden in plain sight.
You know, there's kids out there that are being bought and sold 20 times a day.
We must bring the child back to the center of our care and concern. Today, we launch Goya Cares.
Goya Cares is committed to supporting victims and overcomers of trafficking and abuse to recover, restore, reconnect, and to shine the light that will block traffic.
This is where we become the light.
God saved me. I believe that I was called to this. Perhaps he's calling you to
block traffic.
Join Goya Cares and visit blocktraffic.org.
So you said you have the North American Bigfoot Center in Oregon.
Yeah, it's in Boring, Oregon, in fact.
I know. I read that. When did you start that?
Oh, we started it. We got fully open with the display halls and everything in October of 2019.
Oh, wow.
And we were open for 4 months, and then COVID shut us down for three. That was goodness.
Fun. Yeah, that's always fun.
I don't think I could have chosen a worse time, except perhaps right before the onset of the Great Depression, to open a business. Uh-huh. But we opened it, and we're surviving. You know, my bills are paid. I'm paying rent every month. My employees are paid. We're doing okay, and I'm so thankful for that.
Good. So what can, someone comes in, what can they find in there? What are they going to see when they visit?
Well, when you enter the building, obviously you enter through the gift shop. You also exit through it. I learned that lesson. And so we have a huge variety of things to buy, a lot of tchotchkes and stuff like that, mm-hmm. tourist thing. But at the same time, you can actually buy evidence there because I have cast a number of footprints that are on display, and you can buy copies of those. I have made arrangements with various other people to sell their evidence. Tom Shea is one of the best investigators ever to live. He lives down in Kentucky. He lets me sell his footprint and handprint casts in the shop. Dr. Jeff Meldrum from Idaho State University, a professional anatomist, a professor of anatomy there. He also lets me sell his copies, and I just give him a royalty, and it goes to his Sasquatch mm-hmm. research. And then if you go in the back room, the display halls, that's where the real magic is, in my opinion. Our display hall has the largest public collection of Sasquatch artifacts and evidence anywhere, essentially on display. There are panels, informational panels on footprint morphology and handprint shapes, and we have a number of Sasquatch photographs and pieces of footage that pass my muster. I'm convinced they're real. And I'm no slouch. I don't believe everything that's out there. I'm not naive in that sort of way. I'm not exactly gullible. Mm-hmm. I'm rather skeptical, actually. We also have a small theater that runs short documentaries about a deep dive analysis of various pieces of evidence of why those things are important. We have a whole section devoted to media, Bigfoot in the media, whether it's movies, the Missing Link movies or mm-hmm. Finding Bigfoot. I have a bunch of artifacts from our television show Finding Bigfoot up there that people have seen in the TV show that are on display now. So there's a whole bunch of stuff. And in my, Now, mind you, I'm going to back up just for a moment. Before I was on television, I taught fifth grade for a living. I was a fifth grade teacher. And you can imagine how much fun that would have been, right? Because like this weird, eccentric, excitable person teaching 10-year-olds every day, right? I have basically turned the North American Bigfoot Center into the most bitchin' fifth grade science project on Sasquatch anyone has ever seen.
I gotcha. So, that's awesome.
It's high-level scientific information given to the public in a very digestible and understandable way. There's a little bit of schlock in there, but the vast majority of it is really good, you know, nonfiction material about Sasquatches. We get a lot of comments, you know, tourists going by. So I thought I'd come in and see a bunch of crap in here, and I thought it'd be fun, but this isn't what I expected at all. This is not the schlocky roadside attraction, see the biggest ball of yarn thing that I was thinking of.
Yeah.
This is something else, and that just makes me feel so good about what we're doing here.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're taking a real scientific, fact-based approach to this instead of just trying to sell, you know, a story.
Oh, yeah, and I make it fun. That's the biggest thing, because the American scientific literacy is in the toilet at this point. We don't trust science. We don't trust scientists. And most of us don't even know what science is. People don't realize that science is a process that you go through to find the truth. It's a scientific process.
Yep.
It's not a body of knowledge that's guarded by academics and ivory towers. So it's my job to make that accessible to the public, and we do. But even more than that, I want to point out that, there is this public side of the North American Bigfoot Center. But notice I didn't call it the North American Bigfoot Museum. It's a center. Mm-hmm. And that's because on a weekly basis, sometimes daily basis, we get information. We get sighting reports from people. A lot of times they come in, like during the summertime when we have a lot of people going through the door, tourist season, we probably get maybe 8 or 10 sighting reports a week in here. And most of the time it's like, oh yeah, I saw one back in 94. We were camping, and then we hear the story and we document it. We put a pin on the map. We document, we take down contact information. But very frequently, about once a month, maybe a little less, we get something really fresh. Monday morning, I'm speaking to you on a Tuesday? I don't even know what day it is. Last Monday morning, we got an email that someone saw a Sasquatch on Highway 26 on their way to work in the morning. Well, I was out there 4 hours later looking for footprints, and I cast something. I cast a footprint, and I took photographs of two other possible prints in the forest stuff. We take reports all the time, take them seriously, and get out as soon as possible in order to find and retrieve physical evidence. Stories are great. We are interested in physical evidence. So the sooner we get out there, the better. And over this last year and a half, we've cast about 6 or 8 footprint casts from various sighting reports, just like the one that happened last Monday.
So, I mean, I'm sure people listen, people are going to be skeptical, but like,
oh, they should be. There's so much crap out there. Absolutely.
Yeah, but the more I hear you talk about this, you'd be hard pressed to find that many people that are calling in and then going out and making a Bigfoot footprint for you to find later. Like it just doesn't make sense to me that the amount of data and it sounds like evidence that you have for it all to be planted by somebody out there just trying to mess around.
Well, yeah, and not only, we'll just take the footprints as an example, okay?
Yeah.
Not only would they have to go out and plant a footprint in hopes that I wander around in the same area that they did and I find the thing, but it would also they would have to know something about, frankly, non-human primate foot anatomy and biolocomotion, because Sasquatch feet are not human feet. They're different because, you know, humans, you know, 200 pounds, you can carry a foot, you can carry a mass like that on our foot. Mm-hmm. You cannot carry a mass of 500 or 600 pounds on our foot. The biomechanics don't work. So the foot has to be redesigned in various ways. And you can tell those redesigns by looking at a footprint cast. You can see certain demarcations of the anatomy that lies underneath the skin. So if all of these footprint casts that are internally congruent and consistent with non-human primates and the vast majority of human ancestors, you would have to know about all that sort of stuff, because the very first footprint cast that is still in existence, which is from 1958, there were some before that, but we don't know what happened to them. The first one that's still in existence shows a midfoot flexibility. in just like in chimpanzees and gorillas and other hominins, as we went over that word earlier, it shows a midfoot flexibility that was not described and made public until Dr. Jeff Meldrum from Idaho State University, the anatomist I just mentioned, saw the footprints with his own eyes, because his eye, mind you, his specialty is the anatomy of the foot and how that led to bipedalism. That's his gig. So when he started studying the Sasquatch footprints and he saw this strange bend in a lot of the footprint, mm-hmm. the footprint cast, he realized what that was. He goes, oh, that's the mid-tarsal joint. That's the mid-tarsal flexibility in the foot. Now, us Bigfoot nerds, as in earnest as we are, didn't know about that. He published that information in 1999. But yet, you look at the 58 footprints, you look at the 91 footprints, you look at the footprints from the Patterson-Gimlin film, you look at all the footprints, and you can find evidence of that mid-tarsal pressure ridge or mid-tarsal joint in those footprints. So whoever's been hoaxing these hundreds of footprints we had clearly knew a lot more about bipedalism, yeah. biomechanics, carrying a mass that size, and the foot anatomy than anyone else did until Dr. Meldrum came along. That, to me, seems pretty far-fetched.
Extremely far-fetched.
Yeah, they're real, as it turns out. Bigfoots are real animals. Holy crap. Yeah.
I think I you just convinced me. Most people know that Apartments.com is the most popular place to find a place. That's because Apartments.com has the most rental listings and the most ways to find them, all thanks to some of the most powerful tools like 3D virtual tours. So you'll most likely find your most right place, which most everyone would agree is good news, unless you're part of the most peculiar minority of people who prefer to have less than the most. Make the most obvious move for your next move and use Apartments.com, the most popular place to find a place. Even though you haven't seen one in daylight in, 30 yards in front of you, like, you just have way too much, it sounds like, real life experience of seeing and hearing and the footprints. Yeah,
I've had rocks thrown at me in the middle of the day. I've had rocks thrown at me. And also at night, I've been screamed at from close range. I've tracked them. I've smelled them. I've seen one. I've spoken to literally thousands of people who claim to have seen them as well, with absolutely nothing to gain and everything to lose. Are all of those people lying? Because even if one of them is not, that means the species is real. True. And if one of them is not lying and they're real, then probably a whole lot of those people are not lying or wrong either. Yeah.
Yeah. There are people out there that will, make up some stuff to get on camera, but the majority of people, they're not going to, I don't think the majority of these people are going to lie about, something like this, because like you said, there's going to be some people that think that they're crazy for even suggesting that they saw or heard or did anything close to a Sasquatch.
Yeah. Is it worth it? There's a whole lot of witnesses that don't want any attention at all. In fact, I know like a very famous scientist actually came to me, and this person got extraordinarily upset at me and threatened a lawsuit because I told my research partner this person's name. This person is going to go out to the site where the Sasquatch was seen by the scientist with me. And I said, I mentioned your name to my partner, and this person got very upset and threatened a lawsuit. So I just said, you know what? This sighting report is not worth it. And I just backed away. People see these things. People of impeccable character see these things. Police officers, military people, clergy, academics, regular Joe Schmo, grandma, you name it, man. Everybody, a cross-section of society sees these things. There's no rhyme or reason except for the habitat in which they're seen. So why is it that people in the desert aren't lying about these things? So, why is it that people down in Kansas aren't lying, saying that they see these things all the time too? It's because it's not a demographic phenomenon. It's a geographic phenomenon, just like you would expect it to be if we're dealing with biology.
Yeah. Certain animals are in certain places. It's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. And when you plant Sasquatch sightings over bear reports, as I mentioned earlier, done deal. Sasquatches and bears need the same stuff, and they live in the same places because of it.
Gosh, I hope I see a Sasquatch someday.
Well, I hope so, too. Yeah, my number. Give me a call if you do.
I will.
I'll add it to the thousands of others we have on report.
So, Finding Bigfoot, The Search Continues is now airing on Animal Planet. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, it's on Discovery Plus.
Discovery Plus.
All the Finding Bigfoot stuff. And you can, I have a podcast. I'm not competing with you because podcasts aren't like that.
No, go ahead.
Bigfoot and Beyond with Cliff and Bobo. Yeah, Bobo's the big cool dude. I'm the nerd dude on Finding Bigfoot. But Bobo's the guy everybody wants to have a beer with. He and I do a podcast together every week. It's called Bigfoot and Beyond with Cliff and Bobo. And, of course, North American Bigfoot Center, the coolest Bigfoot museum that I personally know of.
In Boring, Oregon.
Oregon, outside of Portland.
Check them all out. I hope that everyone listened and enjoyed this. We brought a little insight into the world of Sasquatches. Cliff, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. And you know what? I hate to say it. I was told to watch this football game. I know you're a football guy. They say, you got to watch the big football game, right? I turn it on. There were no Bigfoots at all. I turned it off. I didn't understand.
One last question. What do they smell like?
Well, Sasquatches are known to have a smell associated with them, but actually, only about 10 or 15% of sighting reports have a smell associated with it. Generally speaking, the smell is described as like a wet dog or a skunk or musky, which is interesting because gorillas, it turns out, have a scent gland in their armpit that when they're stressed out or being territorial or fighting high-pressure situations, they exude a similar smell. So there's a precedent in the apes with this, which is really interesting to me. I've smelled Sasquatches three times. Mm-hmm. One time it did smell, in fact, like a wet dog skunk sort of thing. But the other two times, even though they were hundreds of miles apart, smelled mm-hmm. exactly the same.
Wow.
And the best words I could put on it is dog shit Parmesan.
Okay. Dog shit Parmesan. I like it.
I'm just going to give you the truth. That's what I smelled.
I appreciate it. All right. Thanks, Cliff.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Marshall amps are nothing short of iconic. You've seen them in the biggest stages across the world. Now you can take Marshall's heritage with you on the go with their incredible headphones and speakers. Marshall has rocked stages all over the world for more than a half a century. So it's time for you to start rocking wherever you go with a portable Bluetooth speaker from Marshall. Check out the Stockwell 2. It travels light but sounds heavy. Built for life on the road, the compact Stockwell 2 offers 20 plus hours of playtime and it is water resistant, making it extremely rugged and durable. The Stockwell 2 has a solid metal grill that pays tribute to the steel mesh grill found on many microphones and guitar-inspired carry strap for easy portability. It's the heritage and legacy of Marshall for you to take anywhere you go, from the mountains to the pool. Get your own portable speaker today at marshallheadphones.com. Use code UNCUT15 for 15% off any portable speaker at marshallheadphones.com. That's marshallheadphones.com. Okay, that's a wrap. Cliff Berrickman, host of Finding Bigfoot, The Search Continues, North American Bigfoot Center in Oregon, and then he's got a Bigfoot podcast with him and Bobo. Don't recall the name, but rewind 30 seconds to find it. I'm not sure. I want to believe all this, and here's where the rub is. We were just talking, like, there's probably a lot of people out there that probably are making up stuff to get on camera or to get whatever attention they're going to get from this. But as Cliff pointed out, if there's one person that isn't lying, it exists. We've got no specimen. I don't think we have any DNA. We've got footprints, some grainy pictures, rocks being thrown at you, sounds, a smell, so I don't know. I don't know if that's enough for you listening. I don't know if it's enough for me either. I want to think it is. And going back and forth on this one, the whole foot thing was cool listening to that. Because, I mean, there's no other animal in the U.S. that probably has the same, that footprint. So it can't be mixed up with a bear or something else. I don't know. I think I need to go. I kind of want to go on one of these searches and hear the noises. I think I need to experience that because Cliff has experienced this probably thousands of times all over the country, which I think I needed to experience that and need to see it firsthand. Or hopefully I just run into a Bigfoot in Montana in a couple weeks and we can solve this debate once and for all. But that's it. I think I have more questions than I started with on the whole Bigfoot thing, but that's okay. Maybe we'll circle back at some point later down the line. Hit me up on Twitter, Instagram. Hope you're enjoying it. If you've got any guests that I need to talk to in the podcast, let me know. But that's a wrap for this one and for Bigfoot. And I don't know. I don't think we solved the question, but sure as hell talked about it. All right. Next.
What's up, everyone? It's NFL Hall of Fame wide receiver Chris Carter. And yes, I'm back, and I'm hosting a new podcast called Wide Receiver One, presented by Blue Wire and WinBet. I'm going to be talking to some of the best wide receivers in the game today about every topic that is related to football, but more importantly, the personal struggles. We're going to dive deeper into the man underneath the helmet, who he is, who he once was, and who he wants to become. Listen to me, NFL Hall of Famer Chris Carter, on Wide Receiver One on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.